Here's a wild stat to kick things off. According to HubSpot, 61% of marketers say generating traffic and leads is their number one challenge. And yet some marketers don't just generate leads, they create systems that turn leads into raving fans, repeat buyers, and lifelong customers. And that's where today's guest comes in. Seth Green is a direct response marketing legend. He's the founder of Market Domination LLC, a multi-time best-selling author, host of multiple podcasts, and he's worked with everyone from Main Street businesses to celebrities like Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank. I'm your host, Chelsea Alves, and I'm so excited to welcome Seth to the podcast today.
Thank you so much. It is an honor to be here. I think you should introduce me everywhere I go.
I'm glad you appreciate that introduction. Welcome. Like, as I said, we are so excited to have you here today and to speak with you. To kick things off, can you just share a little bit about your background and how you got to where you're at today?
Sure. That could take the whole show, so I'll do the short version. So I started out as a college financial aid negotiator several decades ago. It was a career that didn't exist that I made up because I was so frustrated because my dad, every semester of college, would give me such a hard time about how much it cost, and that was many decades ago. So I gave up a dream of being a Broadway star to become a college financial aid negotiator. I went to work for a Fortune 500 company that made me make 300 cold calls a day, interrupting strangers asking for money. I hated it. I loved helping people. I hated making the cold calls. So I found legendary marketing guru Dan Kennedy, borrowed more than my house to get to work with Dan. And in 2 years, I was one of the top 30 financial advisors for bringing on new business in the country at that company with 6,700 other advisors competing with me. That got me written about in every trade journal in the industry before the internet. And financial advisors started calling me saying, how do I grow like you? I faxed Dan Kennedy and said, what do I do? He said, you start a marketing company and you do it for them, which was 18 years ago. I started marketdominationllc.com. And we branched out to 63 industries since then. And it's been an incredible roller coaster ride for the last 18 years.
Wow. Well, that is a very condensed but amazing version of your history and impressive to say the least. So clearly you've had a lot of success. You've even worked with people like, as I said earlier, Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank, a big name, and other really big names as well. What's some of the biggest lessons you've learned from working alongside, celebrity entrepreneurs?
Wow. Okay. So that's a good question. Biggest lessons from celebrity entrepreneurs. So Kevin, one of his favorite lines is test before you invest. He is always talking about, hey, what is the minimum viable funnel? What is the minimum viable ad spend? What can we do cost-effectively, relatively inexpensively to find out if something's going to work and then scale once it works and improve it from there? So I've learned that lesson many, many times from Kevin. I've learned from other folks to stay on the cutting edge, try and stay on top of everything that's going on in terms of whatever's going on in your marketplace, whether that's marketing, whether that's a new social media network, whether it's an app, whether it's AI, which is what a lot of people are talking about these days. You've got to stay like in a mastermind group of people who are super smart and on the bleeding edge of things to stay ahead of the curve. And another big lesson I've learned from people like Rich Sheffrin, Perry Belcher, and Perry Marshall has been never stop learning.
I love that. And I feel like those are also actionable and applicable and definitely make sense. So those are some very great lessons that you've learned from your celebrity counterparts or mentors.
All of the above. Counterparts, mentors, friends, clients. I am blessed that the people I used to go to a conference to see speak, I would sit in the back of the room and then run to the table and buy whatever they're selling, that we now get to serve them, or they're now colleagues, friends. It's been an incredible, I pinch myself on a regular basis.
Disconnected. But we're back. So let's get to the next question. Technical difficulties. So you're a big believer in multi-step marketing campaigns. Can you walk us through what a simple and effective campaign might look like for a service-based business?
Absolutely. And service-based businesses are probably at least half our client base, if not more. So one of the biggest marketing mistakes that people make is doing one-shot marketing. They send out one letter, one invitation. They run ad on Facebook or LinkedIn or send one message. And when it doesn't immediately make them rich overnight, they say marketing doesn't work. And it's not true. Look around you. Every single product you own is a result of somebody marketing something. So it's not that it didn't work. It's probably you gave up too soon. So simplest multi-step marketing campaign that I can possibly think of is, let's say, and there should always be more than one step. I would say at least three steps in every marketing campaign. Then a three-step direct mail campaign. Instead of one letter to your customer, client, or prospect, send three in a row. And for the price of three postage stamps, you will find that you will generate a significant amount of increased results. We have found literally every time we add another step, we made more money. I mean, we have campaigns that run hundreds of steps because every time we add a step, at least somebody bought and made it worthwhile.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, I think it requires multiple steps, not just one step and kind of giving up. So completely agree. In your experience, what separates businesses that get stuck in feast or famine mode from ones that generate consistent and predictable growth?
It's a great question. I think there's a couple factors to that. I think there's continuity revenue, right? Do you have a certain number of clients that pay you automatically recurring every month so that you know, no matter what, I've got X amount of revenue coming in the door? And then does that baseline cover the bills? And can you just keep adding to it? So that helps stop the feast or famine cycle. I think marketing needs to be an evergreen process. It needs to be something that happens all the time. If you only market when you need business and you do a flurry of activity and then you get the clients and then now you're taking the time to serve them and now you don't have any time to market, so you don't do anything marketing-wise until you lose somebody and you have to replace them, you're going to be on that feast or famine cycle. I think making marketing an integral part of your daily activities, you should always be prospecting, always be marketing, always be generating new business. And I think if you do that and build continuity revenue into your business and always be bringing on more, you can make a significant transition away from that feast or famine cycle.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I agree that you should always be marketing. I feel like a lot of organizations sometimes neglect marketing and just kind of focus solely on sales and kind of neglect the, like, always trying to gain new customers, not just relying on your current customers in case they churn, and, you know, just always be top of mind for people and building your brand recognition.
100%.
So you've said that most businesses don't have a lead problem. They have a follow-up and conversion problem. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Absolutely. So I ask that question in every marketing consultation. It's who's your ideal client? And then how many leads you get last month? How many did you convert into paying customers, clients, or patients? And then what did you do with those existing clients? So it's not just that you need leads. Leads are what everyone thinks of because it's, forgive the term, sexier. Ooh, I want more leads. But you could just be pouring water into a leaky bucket with a whole bunch of holes, right? You've got to make sure your conversion systems are dialing in for turning those leads into paying customers. And then it's a question of what follow-up are you doing with that customer? What nurturing are you doing with that customer? You've got a great source of endless leads in terms of your existing customers in their social networks. Who are their friends or followers on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, whatever network they're on? And all you have to do is tap that, and you might not need to spend, forgive the heresy, right? You might not need to spend so much money on marketing if you spent more on nurturing your existing customers and their databases to get you in front of more people at a much more cost-effective manner.
Yeah, no, good point. One of the things you're known for is turning podcasts into lead generation machines. What's your playbook for launching a podcast that actively drives ROI and is effective?
So I wrote an entire book giving away our secret sauce about that. It's called The Ultimate Guide to Growing Your Business with a Podcast, Turning Warm Fuzzy Feelings into Cold Hard Cash. And for your listeners, if they go to ultimatepodcastbook.com, they get 33% off the Amazon physical price of the book and we'll ship it out to them. So the playbook is in the book, but the short version is it's not about the downloads. Everyone thinks I'm just going to go viral and make a bunch of money with ads and sponsorships. And then they pod fade, which is literally the term for it when you quit before you've gotten to episode 10 because you didn't make a bunch of money. But if you look at us, we do view it totally differently. I think podcasting is the greatest networking tool ever invented. And instead of worrying about your downloads, it should be, how can I monetize the relationship with my guests? How can I be strategic and interview people who have the audience I want, build a relationship with them, and get them to share me with their audience, thus doing a whole lot of my marketing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think podcasts, like you said, open the door to such a strategic way to network with other people, especially like-minded individuals and likely people in your own industry. So it's such a great channel to take advantage of, but at the same time, it does take a lot of work. It is work, but it's so worthwhile if you keep at it and don't just give up after, like you said, 10 episodes or less.
Absolutely. I mean, we've done about 1400 episodes, and wow. I can track many, many millions of dollars of revenue directly to those podcasts.
So how do you attribute, you know, obviously there's like ad money, but are there any other metrics you look at when you're attributing, you know, revenue tied to podcasting?
Yeah. And we're not looking at the ad revenue. I'm looking at profit per relationship. Looking at, if I'm doing an interview with Chelsea, how much value can I add to her? How much revenue can I drive her way? And then I know it's going to come back to me.
Yeah, no, that's such a great way to frame it and such a great way for people to look at it, because a lot of people do just kind of solely look at the ad revenue generated from podcasting.
And most podcasts are never going to get big enough to get any meaningful money from downloads or sponsorships anyway, which is why I built our whole process for a local service business who was never going to get maybe more than 5,000 downloads ever to generate 6 or 7 figures a year in revenue from their show without selling a single ad.
No, that's fantastic. And then just to piggyback off that last question, so many people think of podcasts as just content, but you approach them, like you said, more like strategic networking. Can you explain how business owners can use them to get clients or how they can develop those deeper relationships that lead to long-lasting partnerships or sales even?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can interview your ideal client and start a relationship with them in a way where they don't perceive you as trying to sell something. And then when you work our follow-up process and turn that into a show, what we call a show me the money call, you will have the warmest sales call you've ever had in your life. 2, you can interview the other people who serve your audience and start relationships with them to get them to endorse you tacitly by promoting the show that they were on to their audience. I mean, if you take a local bricks and mortar example, if we take the financial advisor, the retirement planner, he serves the same audience that high-end accountants and lawyers do. Well, if he interviews them on his show and follows our process, he'll turn them into referral sources. When otherwise, if he approached them and said, "Will you refer your clients to my business?" they'd say no. But if you start with a podcast and our follow-up, it changes the game and turns those no's into yeses.
So you've obviously written a book on podcasts and the secret sauce behind that. But you've also written multiple books on marketing, if I'm not mistaken. What's one outdated tactic you wish businesses would stop doing and one underrated tactic more people should use?
Okay, so total of 9 books. I'm working on number 10 at the moment. Wow. I'm going to go in reverse order. So underrated tactic, I wish they would use more: direct mail. Everybody thinks direct mail is dead. Everything is digital. There is less competition, less clutter in your snail mailbox than ever before, which means there's more opportunity than ever before. I can target without restriction. I can get rid of privacy rules. I can say pretty much whatever I want. I can do things without social networks censoring or banning some algorithm banning my ad. And I can show up in a physical direct mail package in a way that I can never do online. So I wish more people did direct mail. We do a ton of it and it works better than ever. What is a tactic I think people should stop doing? Stop spamming me on LinkedIn. If your LinkedIn message looks anything like mine, I get 10 or 12 a day of obviously cold messages from people I don't know directly saying, "Book a demo, buy my stuff. I'm like, you haven't even started a relationship yet. I don't even know you yet. Like, what happened to, you wouldn't walk up to someone you first met and say, "Hi, want to get married," right? You would get to know them first. You'd probably date for a while, right? I didn't marry my wife on the first date. So why don't we treat our online relationships like the normal phases of human intimacy, which is not 0 to 100 in 30 seconds. So I wish people would stop cold prospecting directly for a sale and focus more on nurturing relationships. It would work a lot better.
I completely agree with that. I feel like that's 90% of my LinkedIn inbox as well, is, you know, download this guide or buy my product. And I'm like, I have no idea who you even are or have any relationship with you. So this is going to be read and deleted.
Absolutely.
So your firm obviously works with service-based businesses. You work with financial advisors, lawyers, dentists. A lot of those industries aren't always quick to adapt to modern marketing. How do you tailor your strategies for kind of like older school sectors.
You are 100% right about that. And there are times we have to drag them by their teeth to convince them to get into the 21st century and take advantage of the amazing opportunities that today's modern marketing world that you are an expert in has to offer. So how do we deal with that? Sometimes we do. Sometimes we're successful at convincing them that they need to do things that's out of their comfort zone. And sometimes we're not. I remember doing a presentation for an accounting firm 10, 15 years ago, probably 12 years ago. And the founding partner of the accounting firm at the end of it, he said he had wanted, this was his certain target market. We had done the research, came back with a presentation on LinkedIn marketing to get to his target market. And he said, I don't believe in LinkedIn. And I said, what do you mean you don't believe in it? It's not a religion. And he said, I think it's a fad. I don't think it's going to last. So I'm not going to do this. And the junior accountant who brought us in, when she walked us out the door, she said, I'm so sorry. I use LinkedIn all the time. He's a dinosaur. I'm not sure he knows the box on his desk is a computer. So sometimes you win, sometimes you don't.
Yeah. At least you're throwing it out there and they can do with it what they will.
Yes. You can't always make people do what you want. That's why we live as marketers.
Exactly. You're clearly a systems guy. What are a few of the core systems you believe every business should have in place to scale their marketing?
Yes, it took me some painful lessons to learn to be a systems guy, but now I've become obsessed. So system to me is an acronym that stands for saves you time, energy, and money. So the most important system, one for lead generation, one for lead conversion, getting them to pay you, and then one for client service, delivering what you promised. I think those three are probably the most important ones.
Love that. You've built an incredibly successful agency. What are some of the biggest growing pains you experienced while scaling, and how did you overcome those?
There's been a lot of growing pains. They still happen. They just become different growing pains. So hiring the right people, training the right people, bringing on the business to pay to hire the right people, and then having to train them to deliver for the right people, for the clients. I've had to learn the lesson a couple times, don't spend the money until it clears your bank account. And I've learned that very painfully. So multiple times, I would say, and the most important one I think is honestly work more on yourself than you do on everything else. There's no greater lab for developing yourself as a person for personal development than trying to grow a business. Because in my opinion, the highs, when you win, the highs are higher than they are anywhere else, but the lows are also lower than anywhere else. So I think who you are, one of my favorite quotes from Dr. Corey Melnikoff is who you are being affects how well what you do works. So the more you work on yourself and the more you make yourself a better spouse, thought leader, father, mother, parent, friend, entrepreneur, spiritual human being, the more your business will rise to meet the new level that you have evolved to. So I say work more on yourself than anything else and your business will grow to meet the new you.
That's fantastic advice. And I completely agree with that. I love that you place an emphasis on focusing on yourself, because I feel like sometimes as marketers, we often forget to think of ourselves, and that can go to the wayside when things are so crazy and things are constantly evolving and you're chasing the next best thing like AI. So I think that's such a great point that you bring up.
Thank you. I am biased, but I agree.
So podcasting, books, direct mail, email nurturing. How do you help clients decide which channel to focus on when there's so many different marketing channels out there to choose from?
I think that's really important to talk about, because people get seduced by the latest shiny object, the latest network, the latest app that they think, I got to be everywhere all at once, and you don't. I would say let's simplify your life and your marketing, and let's figure out who's your ideal client, customer, or patient, and where do they hang out? What network are they on? So if your audience is all on LinkedIn, then you probably don't also need to be on Facebook and X and TikTok and YouTube and 17 other and Discord and school and 17 other places. So pick one target market, pick one media platform or one way to reach them that they use, and make them one offer and get really, really good at that until you've mined all of the gold there is to mine in that hill, in that media platform. before you go diversify and get on seven other social networks and make yourself overwhelmed in terms of how do you do it all.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. I feel like a lot of people get stuck in trying to be a jack of all trades rather than a master of one thing. And they, like you said, move on to the next best thing. And yeah, it's good to kind of master your craft in one area before trying to take something else on and being okay at everything you do.
Amen.
So what's something you wish every business owner knew about building authority and trust in their market? I know a lot of the businesses you work with, like lawyers and dentists and even service-based businesses, trust is such a critical aspect of each of those businesses in terms of how they attract and retain customers.
I think when it comes to trust, first of all, I'll tell you, I'm not the expert on that. On authority, maybe, trust not. My trust coach is Ari Gelper from unlockthegame.com. I would defer to him on the trust part of the conversation. On the authority part, I would say show up where your prospects are, show up more often than anyone else, and show up in a different way than anyone else, and show up doing something that no one else is doing, and that will establish your authority in the marketplace. A faster way to do that is figure out who else has more authority in their eyes than you do and interview those people on a podcast, and then you will have authority by association.
Yeah, that's a great example. Can you give us an example of what that would look like if someone hadn't taken or started or hasn't started podcasting and they're trying to build authority kind of from the ground up without the podcast initiative in place?
I don't see why you wouldn't do one. I mean, you could literally do one for free on Zoom or on, you know, on your phone or use StreamYard or something like that. So if I had to build authority, so what I did before podcasts were a thing, I started our show 3 years after the very first audio podcast was ever aired. So I was early. Before the podcast media existed, I would, go in person, interview people in person with a voice recorder I bought from Office Depot that I still have. It no longer plugs into my computer because the cord doesn't work. The port doesn't work that way anymore. They don't make them that way. But I literally interviewed people in person, paid someone. We didn't have Otter and Rev. I paid someone to physically type up every word. That was my transcription. And then I would edit it and turn it into a book. So before we could use podcasts, I did in-person interviews and turned those into a book. And then launched the book and got them to promote the book to their clients because they were in it. And that was my way of doing a podcast before podcasts existed.
Yeah, I will say one thing that I'm so thankful for when it comes to artificial intelligence is that I no longer have to have a note taker or be the note taker. It's one of the best use cases of AI. I do not miss those days.
Amen to that.
Well, Seth, this has honestly been such a powerful conversation. You've really given us a masterclass in all things marketing and podcasting. So I appreciate you being here. Where can our listeners go to connect with you or explore how Market Domination LLC can help their business grow?
Absolutely. So again, if you want a copy of the book, the physical copy at 30% off the Amazon price, go to ultimatepodcastbook.com. If you want to learn about us as an agency and how we can help your business, go to marketdominationllc.com. And the social network I'm active on the most is LinkedIn, but you should talk to Chelsea before you talk to us.
And to everyone listening, if you found this episode helpful, make sure to subscribe, drop us a review, and don't forget to check out Unmiss's free website audit tool. It's a fast way to spot opportunities to elevate your own marketing game. And thank you all for tuning into the Unmiss podcast. We'll see you all next time. Thanks, Seth.
Thanks so much for having me.